Morning to everybody.
Morning.
Wow, this is really, really something for me. It's really humbling. Man, I'm seeing a lot of faces that I know. I really missed you guys. I want you to know that. You had a very strong and powerful impact on my life and on Shannon's. Shannon says hello, but she was scared of you and wouldn't come. Shannon is the kind of the lone caretaker of her father, who is 89 years old, and says he's going to live to be 100. And he just may do it, but Shannon is not able really to get away from being close proximity to him very much right now. And I was going to be here longer than Shannon can get off work, but she I talked to her early this morning, and she said to tell you that she loves you and misses you. She said, "Darling, are you nervous?" I said, "Well, I am now that you asked." I said, "I am nervous. I'm probably as nervous as I've been in a number of years. I know the expectations are high, and it's the kind of the novelty of the situation today." Jeff Bettinger texted me and said, "It better be a good sermon." Thanks, Jeff. My anxiety and my glucose numbers went through the roof there. I texted Jeff back and said, "You need to lower your expectations." So he said he would bring the Farm and Dairy this morning and read it during the sermon. So, Jeff, I don't see it, but I'll let you get it out there if you want. I am very sorry for Hattie Byers and her family. Bud was a good guy. I can just see him like he's still here. He was pretty hunched over. He was always holding his arms back like this. But Bud was a good guy. He didn't say a lot to me. We didn't have long, deep conversations. But when he did talk to me, I took note and I listened. And I don't know if you as a congregation know this, but Bud was one of those members who a lot of things happen here because of what Bud did and contributed behind the scenes. But he didn't want it advertised, or he didn't want it made a big deal. But there was more than one thing that took place here that would not have taken place if it hadn't been for Bud and Hattie Byers. But Jeff is right. Bud is not suffering from a bad back right now. You know, when we cry, and I remember one of the last times I was in this building was standing over the casket of Randy Williams. That's why it's been a little emotional for me. And the last time I was in here, Davey, was standing over your father. So it's, you know, I apologize, forgive me, the emotions are just kind of running wild, but I remember just squalling like a baby when Randy died. But we are crying for ourselves, are we not? They are both in better places. Randy used to torment Bud as a student. And I'll bet he's tormenting him right now. And Bud's probably telling him, "You are in detention again." But I encourage you to think about Hattie and to pray for her and help her and her family in any way that you can. Davey, it is ironic that you read Scripture. By the way, I'm going to pause here a minute. As I said in Bible class, and I'm seeing faces I don't recognize, I'm not the regular dude here. Seriously, I'm not, okay? I'm a fill-in guy. This is not going to be a traditional sermon. So if you were expecting 3 points, a poem, and a funny story, you might want to go now. You know what Shannon said to me? Don't be nervous, be yourself. That's what I plan on being. I hope it's encouraging to you. I hope it's beneficial to you, but it ain't going to be traditional. What I started to say, Davey, it's ironic because you read Scripture, as you noted, the last sermon I gave her, you were the Scripture reader. So that's interesting how this played out. You get attached to people over the years. The Landefeld family, for me, is one that I've been very attached to. Davey, I think I have married and buried everybody in your family, buddy. I first met Daryl at the Langs congregation, and Daryl and I became very good friends, and I stood over his casket in August of 2003. Have done a lot of laughing and shared a lot of tears with the Landefeld family, and Davey, y'all mean a great deal to me. I want you to know that. There are some people I wish that were here who are not here. Obviously, the big guy in the overalls that sat right over here with Emma, I wish he were here. There's another dude that you all know, and he used to just pace while I preached. You remember Alan? I'd say, Alan, can you please sit down? And he would just pace. And I miss Alan. There were two sisters that sat right over here. And you know who I'm talking about. And they used to drive me crazy. They could not get over the fact that they were related to me. And they let everybody in the world know it. And I've driven them all over God's creation, and they drove me nuts. But I loved them. You may remember the time that Bob Kenny got the bright idea that I needed to tell the church what a croc shoe was, because we were raising money to send to Haiti for kids to wear croc shoes. So I stood at that pulpit and I said, does everybody know what a croc is? And Ethel went down to the ground, ripped off her croc, and waved it around. And she said, Chuck, this is a croc. And I thought, it is a croc. You're not a kid, it's a croc. But what was most memorable about that was Jerry Rose. God rest his soul. Jerry Rose may have said 6 words to me in 10 years. But they were all memorable. And Jerry met me at the back there, and he said, Chuck, I'm sure glad you didn't ask us if we knew what a bra was. I said, me too, Jerry. Me too. It's a memorable time in my life here with you. I hope it was for you. You know, it's Maya Angelou, the famous African-American poet, who said, people forget what you said to them. They forget most of what you did to them. But they never forget how you made them feel. And that's true. The Aberdeen congregation decided that they wanted an intern. That's always what the located preacher wants to hear. We should get an intern in here to preach instead of you. I said, okay, what do we want to do? Well, you make contact with the schools and just call all over the country and see if we can get a young man in here. Because the Aberdeen church, I work with them a little bit, and then there's a retired astronomy professor who was a preacher, and he moved there shortly after me and Shannon did, and so he and I kind of preach and teach together. Great man, just as knowledgeable as you can imagine. And so he and I were going to mentor this young man. So we're sitting at a restaurant not long after this kid got here, he and his wife, We're just chatting about this and that. And Shannon says, "Is there anything you guys want to ask Chuck about preaching?" And the wife says, "Yeah, I want to say something. I want to ask you something." She was pretty somber. She said, her husband's name was Tristan. She said, every time Tristan talks to a preacher that's been at it a while and says that this is what he wants to do, they roll their eyes. And they always have something negative to say. And they always say to him, "Are you sure you want to do that?" I said, I'm sorry. There's some guys out there that do this and they're bitter. For whatever reason, they're bitter. They're tired of it. Which, by the way, they should get out. She said, "I just have two questions for you, Chuck, and you can take your time in answering them, but I want to ask you two questions. What is the best thing about preaching?" And she said, "Question number two, how do you handle the bad stuff with preaching?" Because she said, "We've heard all about it." Then Tristan piped up and he said, "You don't have to answer that right now, sir. Just whenever you get a chance." I said, "I'll answer it for you right now. I do not have to think one more second about this." The answer is the same for both questions. The best thing about preaching are the friends and the connections and the bonds that you make with each other. And how do you handle the bad things about preaching? It's the friends and the bond and the connection that you make with each other. I don't remember all the sermons I gave. I don't remember all the Bible classes I gave. But I remember how you guys made me and Shannon feel. You're good eggs. Did you know that? Some of you are a little cracked. Shannon says some of you are a little scrambled. I think some of you are hard-boiled. But you are all very good eggs, and I appreciate the influence that you had on me and the influence that you have on this community. I want to say one more thing. Scott McFarland's a good man. He's a good man. He's a good young kid. He's got a good heart. And I don't know what you're going to do for a preacher. I hear you're looking. What you guys want, whoever it is, you want a godly, spiritual man. Now, you had it in Scott. I don't know all the details and all the circumstances, and I don't need to know, and I don't care. But I hope you will always treat him as well as you have me and Shannon. You can have a man who will entertain you from the pulpit and be religious but not be godly. Be cautious of that. Can you be religious and not spiritual? Oh, you better know it. Can you be religious and not godly? You better know it. Let me say one more thing to you visitors. And this is all joking aside. I'm not the regular dude. If I preach from the heart. That's the only way I know to do it. I don't preach from scripted notes. I preach from the heart. Sometimes things come to me. It just comes to me. What happens is you say some things you didn't plan on saying in a way you didn't plan on saying it. If I offend you, don't you hold it against this congregation. We have an agreement? It's just me. This is Chuck Schulte. I live 3,000 miles away. If you have issue, come out there and see me and we'll talk. Or text me or email me, okay? I speak as I personally understand and appreciate the Bible. I do not speak for the shepherds of this congregation, nor the deacons or them. So, you know, we went to the Woodsfield Church. This nutcase from Seattle was there. You won't believe what he said. I ain't never going back. That's the wrong thinking there. Okay? Go to John 15, if you don't mind, for just the few minutes we got here. John 15. By the way, when the kids cry and squall, do not feel like you need to take them out. I don't get to hear this all the time. Okay? If you want to stay in here, you stay in here. My policy is the louder they scream, the louder I preach. All right? But, you know, hearing all of the little voices is actually rather comforting to me. John 15. This is the passage that Davey read for us. So I said to you in Bible class, what happens from time to time is, actually it happens all the time, to be honest with you, I'm reading, I'm studying, I'm thinking, and I see something I never, ever thought about before. And it's like, wow, wham, there it is. Thank you, Lord. I didn't know about that, and I this is something I now have to think about and appreciate. I always thought that it was not good to consider God my friend. Have you all ever struggled with this? Do you think God is your friend or your father? This is where you talk. I don't know how you know. Okay, father primarily, right? Just some things, they sound a little disrespectful. Y'all know what I'm saying? God is my best friend. Really? Well, he's my father. Now, as you guys know, I don't know anything about kids. I wish I had a chance to know about kids, but me and Shannon, it just wasn't to be. We just didn't get it. Now, if you want to know about cats, you know, I bought Shannon this big poster. It says, "One cat away from crazy cat lady." And she is. In fact, she is crazy cat lady. So I know about cats, not kids. But what I'm told by some of you parents and grandparents is, you can't be your kid's friend. Is that true? I mean, I don't know. You can't be your friend, your kid's friend. You gotta be the dad. You gotta be the mom. You gotta be the father. You gotta be the mother. You can't be their best friend. And the problem, if you're their best friend, it's just disastrous. Now, I don't know anything about kids, but I was raised by two pretty doggone good parents. And my dad's one of the best friends I ever had in my life. And Davey, I'll bet you could kind of say the same thing there, buddy. So I'm not Dr. Phil, I never had kids. I don't know what that's all about. You can't be your kid's friend. But it kind of, people saying that to me made me think, well, maybe I can't be God's friend. Maybe he's just got to be the dad. He's just got to be the father. He's just got to be the disciplinarian. And I can't be his friend. But then this is what I found. John 15. John 15, and this is in verse 12. I know you guys know this passage. This is my commandment, that you do what? That you love one another. How are we to love each other? As I have loved you, that deep, deep, serious agape love. Now listen, this isn't the gist of the sermon, but I'd be remiss if we didn't mention this. When you read this, what you need to do is make a little note in your Bible, and the note needs to be Mark chapter 12, verse 29. So if you have a pencil or a pen, or you're using your phone or your iPad, it's Mark chapter 12. There is a section there which some Bibles, and you may not like this because this sounds, forgive me for saying this, but I grew up in the Church of Christ. I know what the jargon is. Some of you would say, this sounds denominational. I don't care what it sounds like, it's right. But sometimes there's a heading there, and it's called the Jesus Creed. Does anybody know what the Jesus Creed is? So, do you remember, there was this incident in Mark 12 where the Sadducees came to Jesus and were asking him, when you die, if you were married all these bunch of times, whose wife are you going to be? Whose husband are you going to be? You remember all that nonsense? Jesus, it's funny because Jesus says, well, you guys are ignorant. He says, you really don't know? Do you not know because you're ignorant of the word or you're ignorant of the power of God? It's really a funny response. Because what do we know about the Sadducees? Why are they asking about the afterlife? What do we know about them? They didn't even believe in it, for pity's sake. But Jesus is in this little discussion, this little argument with them, and he's saying, look, when you get there, you're not married to anybody. You're just like an angel. Nobody gets married. Nobody is married. You're just there. Well, he's in the middle of that discussion, and another dude walks up on him. The other guy says, since you're answering hard questions, I got one for you. What's the single greatest commandment of all of them? And Jesus says, well, I really don't have a favorite. Your looks are funny. I didn't know he said that. He didn't. He does have a favorite. Does anybody know what his favorite is? He says, I'll tell you what the greatest one is. The Lord your God is one, and you must love him how? With all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. And then he said, and I know you didn't ask about this, but there's a second one. What's the second one? Love your neighbor as yourself. So we can get all the doctrine right, get all the rights, the things right technically with our preaching and our teaching, and you can do the right worship things. What is to be accomplished if you don't love God with all your heart, soul, and mind? What is to be accomplished if you don't love each other as you love yourself? By the way, I gotta just say this, not to go Dr. Phil on you. Do you know why a lot of people have trouble with that second commandment? They don't, this Eleanor just said it. They don't like themselves. They don't like themselves. They don't love themselves. Have y'all ever had to spend much time around someone that doesn't love themselves? Miserable. So when he says, love your neighbor as yourself, what's a given there? What do you got to do first? You have to appreciate who you are because of what God has done for you. So you need to kind of make that note. And as you read that first part there in John 15:12, then you go to Mark chapter 12 and start in verse 29. Back to John 15. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this. This is the greatest way you can show somebody that you love them. By doing what? Lay down your life for whom? For your friends. Okay, so now right there, I read down. I thought, well, now wait a minute. I'm bothered by this thing about that I want to be Jesus' friend. I want to be God's friend. Then I read that and I'm thinking, why am I bothered by this? What does he say? I've laid down my life for you because you are my friend. But then, I mean, it really gets interesting here in a second. You are my friends if what? If you want to be his friend, you think you can be his friend, what do we got to do? You are my friends if you do what I command you. Do you guys remember the little passage in James 2 where James is talking about how, how do we paraphrase it? James says, you can't just say you love God. You can't just say you believe God. What do you got to do? Y'all aren't used to interaction, are you? I'm gathering this. See, I stand before 35 people every Sunday. I'm used to really, we're all talking with each other here a little bit. You can't just say you love God. What do you got to do? You got to show it. Should we be able to just look at each other, examine each other, without any of us saying a word, and know whether we are faithful, loving people? Absolutely. Your life exemplifies it. Your life and your actions and your words show it. That's what James is saying. You can't just say, I believe. You got to live it and you got to do it and you got to show it. And James says, let me tell you about Abraham. Did Abraham believe God?
Yes.
Did he?
Yes.
Yes. How do we know that? How do we know he believed God? What's James say? God said, take your son, go up on the mountain and barbecue him. Right? And Abraham said, I'll do anything for love except that. He took him up there, and he's ready to do it. Which, by the way, have you ever wondered what was going through Isaac's head? Hey, boy, can you, why don't you just climb up on there for a minute? I want to test the fire out here. Okay, Dad. I wonder how that all went down. James says, Abraham believed God and it was counted to him as righteousness. And then here's the significant part. And he was called a friend of God. Why was he God's friend? Anybody? Because he did what God asked him to do. Can you be God's friend? Does he want to be friends with you? Yeah. How do you show that? Do what he says. It gets really interesting here, and this is the part that I've read all my life but not thought much about. So he says in 14, you are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer, and this is a part that threw me, no longer do I call you what?
Servants.
For the servant does not know what the master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard, or you could replace for with the word because all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. All right, a little more audience interaction here. Are we servants or are we friends? Now we got a little fight going here. I heard servants over here, friends over here. Okay. Well, this throws you a little bit because Jesus said, I'm not going to call you servants. You're not servants. But then years after Jesus said this, Paul wrote to the Corinthian church in 1 Corinthians 4, and he said, we should regard ourselves as servants of Christ. Do you ever read something in the Bible and you go, what? Maybe the preacher can explain it. Let me give you a little inside track. Sometimes the preacher doesn't know what it is either. So I thought, oh, now Lord, I want to be your friend. I want that relationship with you. Paul says I should consider myself a servant. Can you be both?
I think so.
I do too, Bob. So look at what he's saying here. I'm not going to call you servants. I'm going to call you friends. Why? Because I'm letting you in on things that normally the master of the house doesn't let servants in on. Y'all watch Downton Abbey? I shouldn't say this, but I can't stand Downton Abbey, but some of you probably watch it. I've seen enough of it to know, you know, it's the whole thing is about the masters of the house and the servants and the... Generally speaking, the master's relationship to the servant is what? What is that relationship? Can you tell me? Just serve the meal. Serve the meal. Clean the room. Clean the stalls. Feed the horses. Can the servant ever say, how are you feeling today about that? I'm not going to tell you how I'm feeling. I'm the boss. You're the kid. I'm the parent. You're the child. Just do it. I'm not your friend. Is that the kind of relationship Jesus has with you guys? Just be baptized. And don't ask me why, and don't ask me when. Just do it. I'm not your friend. I'm your father. Just go. That's your relationship with God? Jesus says, look, guys, I'm not going to call you servants. I'm going to call you friends, because I'm having conversations with you that a regular master doesn't have with servants. I'm telling you things that not everybody knows about. I'm telling you deep mysteries and deep secrets. I ask you, can you be a servant and a friend? What's the answer? Yes. Is Paul right when he says, Chuck, you should regard yourself as a servant of Christ? Is he right? Well, of course he's right. But am I a little bit different type of servant? Am I a little higher up on the chain, you might say? And then this is how it ends. And this kind of goes into another place. I don't have time to delve into it. But to be true to the context, I have to read this with you. You did not choose me, but I chose you. And I appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you. And then this is interesting. How does he end this little discussion? What does he say again? These things I command you, so that you will love one another. You guys are really good listeners, and I remember that about you. And I appreciate you guys and your patience and listening. Is everybody in the room a child of God? You're stunned. How can he ask that? Is everybody in the room a believer, a Christian? If you are not, and you know you are not, or you don't know what I'm talking about, should you do something about this today? You should. Do you want to be God's friend? Let's cut this right down. Let's just get right down to it, okay? Everybody in this room will die. I don't mean to sound too morbid or glass half empty, but don't you already know that? When you die, that moment, you'll just need one friend. Right? You need that one friend who's going to advocate for you and plead your case and look at you, and he's going to look at you, and he's going to look at the Father, and he's going to say, I think he smells like me. Because Jesus wants people who smell like his son. He's going to look at the Father and he's going to say, he did to the best of his ability what you asked him to do. And that's the friend that you must have. So if you're sitting there and you don't know what I was just talking about, and you're thinking, boy, am I going to die? I might die. I need that friend. Well, what you can do is you can talk to me, or you can talk to somebody. Which, by the way, Bob, what you all used to do when we had the invitation, do you still stand for the invitation song? Okay, so you're still scriptural. So here in just a second, we're going to stand, we're going to sing together. What that gives you kind of time to mull out what I said, what you already know about the Bible. And then, Bob, what you all used to do is the elders used to come up and kind of help. Do you still do that? Sometimes. If you don't, can you do it today? Okay, so the elders would come up, and then if anybody would come forward, then we could have a conversation with you, okay? If you're not a Christian, please don't leave here not being a Christian. And if you don't know if you're a Christian, at least get an answer. At least get an answer today, okay? Thank you for being good listeners. Thank you for inviting me back to do this. It's extremely, I can't even tell you how humbling it is for me. I miss it here dearly. This is a wonderful place to live. It was a good congregation. Don't ever take for granted, please, what you guys have. Don't ever take for granted what you have in your community, in your church, and in your friends. Love one another as Jesus Christ has loved us. Can we stand together, please, if we would? Jeff's going to lead us. So again, you mull over what we talked about. If there's anything that you have on your heart that you would like for us to pray for you specifically, I would certainly be honored to do that this morning. Jeff, would you lead us, please?